Our network is here. And thank you for coming. And I think what I really wanted to press on understanding our provider network, we have 200 providers in our network in Boulder and Broomfield counties. 65 at least of those are program-approved service agencies that are approved by the state of Colorado for particular waivers that we are managing. And so the key of this is, for consumers of services, you have tremendous, tremendous choice to make among your providers. If you're unhappy with the one you have right now, understand that there are tons more to choose from. They are all listed off our website. If that's not available to you, certainly give us a call. We'll make sure you get the list of who the providers are. And also, I wanted you to know that even as a community center board, individuals in the state of Colorado can pick and choose community center boards. We have arranged with all the other 19 community center boards in the state of Colorado a written agreement with them that if you so choose and would like to explore another option other than Imagine, you certainly can do that. And I'll make the phone call for you to connect you with the other community center boards. Yes, ma'am. It is still geographical. The question is it no longer geographical? It's still geographical. Our catchment area is Boulder and Broomfield counties. Each community center board has their geographic catchment area. However, if you came to me or one of our staff and said, you're not making it for me, I would like to know what my options are. We have that agreement with the other community center boards and have had it for several years that you could pick and choose and say, I'd like to explore something with North Metro, for example, over in Adams County. So understand that there are tons of choices. I'm really proud of the work that we do at Imagine. It's easy for me to say that when you see some of the stuff that we get accomplished. We have really great relationships with our provider network. We have great relationships with our stakeholders. We have great relationships with our two counties, their commissioners. We have great relationships with our ACL. I mean, not every catchment area can say that, and I think it's really important to know that here in our service area that we get along well with everybody that we think we need to. Our relationships are good with the other providers in the state through our state association alliance. We are members of national associations, so we are in contact with lots and lots of people. Our middle management and leadership staff know by name the counterparts in the other catchment areas. So we stay in touch with them for a lot of different reasons, to learn from one another, because that's low cost, no cost learning for us. And also to be able to share information, to know what resources are available, and when somebody really learns how to do something well, we exchange that information with one another. What I thought we would focus on tonight is kind of this. What do we think is going to happen next? And to do that, these aren't numbers about everybody we serve, but it is the numbers that I have been paying attention to more than some others in the recent months. In early intervention, we have, and these are point in time counts, 417 kids who are eligible for early intervention services in our catchment area in Boulder and Broomfield. In family support, which has now become sort of the catch-all for people that are not lucky enough to have a state-funded resource, we're looking at 894 individuals. And to be eligible for family support, you must still be living at home regardless of your age. That does not include the 417 who technically are eligible that are in birth to three. The Children's Extensive Support Group, we have 35 kids enrolled in that service. And this is important right now, and we're going to bring it up later when we get to some state issues, that we have over 50 kids who are waiting for that particular service right now. So we have this service design in the state that where there's almost twice as many kids waiting as there are eligible. And fortunately, Governor Hickenlooper has noticed that and is going to hopefully do something about it. We'll learn about that in a minute. We are a child placement agency. We are serving 35 kids from 9 counties in the state. So that's the one time, not the only time, that we go outside of Boulder and Broomfield County. So we're serving these kids from a variety of counties in the state, mostly because there's really not that many providers of child placement, foster care placement in the state of Colorado, specifically for kids with developmental disabilities. Adult supported living services, we're looking at 265. Adult comprehensive, 294. That's our enrollment right now. They're spread across all of our service providers. Not all of them. They're spread across many service providers. And then this last thing that I'm keeping an eye on is eligible adults that are not funded by the state. So these 341 individuals are 18 years of age or older, not necessarily living at home, but eligible for the waivers. And I bring this up for a couple of reasons. One, in one of the governor's proposals that they're targeting individuals that are 50 years of age and older who are eligible for services. And we are currently looking at 17 individuals in our service area that meet that description. And the second part is, this is a real number that I can utilize to understand what the demand is on our services. The state will do the same similar thing with most of the other funding mechanisms, except for supported living services and adult comprehensive services. At that point, what the state is paying attention to is the results of an opinion poll that we conduct and all of our counterparts across the state conduct to find out if a family was asked, if you were offered a resource, would you use it? That information is placed in a data system, and that's what the state uses to present to decision makers on whether or not we have a huge waiting list or not. This number is a real number in terms of eligibility. Not everybody of the 341 would take a resource if they were offered right now. So when we talk with the state, I have to understand what they're looking at. They have to understand what we're keeping for data so we can help one another understand what the demand is on our system. Yes, can I back up? Yes, we would have that in our data system. The question is, of the adult supported living services, 265, how many of those might be considered waiting by the state? Would they take a resource if they could get it? And I think in the supported living area, the percentage might be higher than the comprehensive, although it opens up a can of worms because across the state, we're not really sure what that conversation is with each family. We're not sure who even does it. Sometimes it's a mailing. Sometimes it's a volunteer doing it. Sometimes it's a case manager doing it. It might be a phone call. They might say, would you take an out-of-home placement if it came to you? Even though we know today comprehensive services doesn't necessarily mean out-of-home. It could be in your home. So any of that information the state's using, I'm looking at it and saying this is sort of subject to questionable data anyway. So I can't tell you off the top of my head, but we could dig into our data system and determine that. I think the number in supported living services would be considerably higher. Also of that 265, we do get some support from Broomfield County and from Boulder County, local funds, where we are trying to address some of their needs with local funds that would not maybe be as much as they might get from a state SLS resource, but it's something. But they're still counted here for us. Is that good? This is a graphic that I've used a couple of years. It's our projection out through 2020. The names are real. They're out of our data system, so it's not a guess. Well, the blue line becomes a guess after 2014 and beyond. The blue line is representative of the number of individuals who are eligible and funded by state and by state programs. The purple represents the number of individuals who are eligible and not funded by state programs. And there's a critical piece in here, and I hope they get a little red light. Yes. We're over here in 2013, and notice that there's no difference between there. Barely a difference between there and 2009. So we've gone 5 years with flat number of resources coming to us from the state. That's kind of critical because we're seeing this other thing continue to grow. We're going to see and hope to see a little bit of relief of that next year, which I'll get at in a few minutes. But This is a result of a policy that the state has had to, when we have a person who moves away out of state or passes away, they pull that resource back, whereas prior to 2009, we would hang on to it and issue it to the next person on our wait list or the next emergency. We lost that ability to do that, and since we lost that ability to do that, regardless of what number of resources have been approved in the state's budget, we have only been able to stay flat for 5 years. A pretty difficult scenario for us. I've invited a couple of our senior staff to help me tonight. Fred Hobbs, who's our Director of Public Relations, is going to talk to you about some of the fun things that we're doing to recognize our 50th anniversary this year. And then following Fred, Greg Wellens is going to let you know some of the things we're doing with assistive technologies. So I'm going to turn this over to Fred.
Using this microphone, so we don't have to endure a switch of the clip-on microphone. You may have noticed the logo already. We've got some pretty exciting news happening here this year at Imagine. This is our 50th anniversary. You know, Imagine was formed back in 1963 by a group of parents who wanted their children, who happened to have developmental disabilities, to have the same opportunities as all of the other children in their community. And 50 years later, we still use that as the foundation for what we do. We really do believe in the potential of all, and we really do our best to provide tools and supports that allow individuals with developmental disabilities to become participating members of their community. And we think 50 years of doing that is something that's well worth celebrating. So we've done several things already to celebrate. You can see we have a brand new logo that we're going to be using this year. We had our Imagine Celebration, which is our fundraising event, late in January, and we had a lot of different 50-year themes around that event. But most exciting, I think, for all of us here is that we are actually going to be hosting a big party in August, on August 4th. It's in the afternoon. Right now it's scheduled for 3 to 6. That could be a little loose, but it's definitely August 4th. It's going to be held at the Millennium Harvest House in Boulder. Everybody's invited. We are a community organization, and frankly, we couldn't have done what we've done for the past 50 years without the support of our community. So we want our community to be part of this. We're going to debut a 50th anniversary video. We've been working on this for close to a year now. We've been interviewing a lot of different individuals who have been involved with Imagine, some of them from the very beginning. We've talked to some parents who were there at the very beginning. It's exciting stuff. So we will keep you posted as we move forward, but we certainly want to invite you to that. But we'd also like you to be part of this 50-year celebration. And one of the things that we're doing is featuring on Mark's blog a series we're calling 50 Years, 50 Stories. And each week on Mark's blog, we're featuring a story from somebody who's been associated with Imagine over the years. So we're sharing stories of former employees. We're sharing stories from parents of people that we served or board members of Imagine. And of course, we're sharing the stories of the people we served as well. Now, 50 years, 50 stories, that's a lot of different stories. And we would love to hear yours. So if you'd like to be involved in this 50 years, 50 stories, please contact Caroline Siegfried at caroline@imaginecolorado.org. You can send in a story if you'd like. If it's easier for you to have somebody come out and interview you, we would do that as well. But we really want to hear a wide variety of stories, because truthfully, we think at the end of this, we're going to have a series of stories that are really going to reveal the DNA of Imagine and why what we do is so important, and most importantly, why it matters that we're working to provide these opportunities for the individuals that we serve. So I'm asking you to do something, but the other thing I'm going to talk quickly about is what you can do to get information from Imagine. Obviously, since you are all attending this forum here, that's something that's of interest to you. Now, this forum is something that is mandated by the state. We do it annually, but let's be honest, annually probably isn't enough to get all the information you need about what's going on in Imagine. And over the last five, six, 7 years, we've worked really hard to create a variety of ways to share information with Imagine stakeholders that are A, low cost, no cost to us at Imagine, so we can use our funds to provide services, but also that are methods that allow it to be easy for anybody to use at a time and a place that's convenient for them. So of course we've created a website, and a lot of our different departments have their own websites. So one thing I want to really emphasize on the website is that we have a community calendar, and on that calendar you'll find events, lectures, opportunities to get information, to get value above and beyond what you may be receiving just from your services. We understand that this is a complicated system that we work in, and that there's a lot of things that need to be addressed, and maybe I'd imagine we're not able to address all of them, but we want to do our best to give you information about other resources that might be of value to you. We're about to debut a new website, but even on our current website, which is imaginecolorado.org, you'll find that we've incorporated a lot of our social media use. We very intentionally started to use social media as a way to share information. Why? Because, again, it's something that as long as you have a computer and an internet connection, you can access this information at a time and a place that's convenient for you. We can't all come to these kinds of meetings every month or every couple of months. We don't have the time. These are processes and platforms that we've set up so you don't have to do that kind of thing. Now you can access information about Imagine when it works for you. So we're using blogs. I already mentioned Mark's blog with the 50 years, 50 stories. He also shares information about what's going on at the state, and he also shares good information about what's happening with the people we serve or what's going on with programs that we have. We have a blog for our foundation so we can honor our donors who add a lot to what we're able to do here at Imagine. We have a blog for our smart homes. We're using Twitter. We have a Twitter feed that's right on the homepage of our website. This is a really great way to also quickly get information about events that are coming up. Again, extra additional resources above and beyond the services you may already be receiving. And we also use Twitter and all of our social media to once again highlight those people who have supported us through our foundation, because we think that's really important. Getting back to what I said earlier, we're a community organization. We rely on the community. So we want to acknowledge our community when they give us support. And of course, we've embraced Facebook. We have a main Imagine Facebook page. A lot of our different departments have their own Facebook pages. These are great resources to go to find out what's going on at Imagine and above and beyond. And the last piece that I'll mention about why we're using social media, it's not just that it's a low-cost way of sharing information that's convenient to most people. It's also a way to truly open up a dialogue. Again, you can't necessarily come to Imagine and talk to somebody anytime you have an issue. That can get kind of challenging, especially if it's a broader kind of issue. But social media opens the door for real and genuine conversation, and that's what we'd like from it. We'd love to hear from you via social media. So don't be afraid to go on those social media sites, and some of them you can even go on anonymously if you're worried about people knowing your name or associating with Imagine, but let us know how we're doing. We're not afraid to hear tough comments. We need to hear those kinds of tough comments. We are proud of what we're doing, but we understand we don't have all the answers, and there's areas that we can improve upon, and oftentimes you, as our stakeholders, are the best ones to let us know where that is. So at this point, I'm going to hand over the lectern to my colleague, Greg Wellams, but thank you, and thanks for being part of Imagine for this 50 years. It's really been a great journey, and I'm looking forward to the next 50.
Good evening. My name is Greg Wellams, and one of the things that separates Imagine from other community center boards is our investment in technology and how we use technology. And Mark has asked me to share some of the things that we're doing it, that we've been doing with our technology, what we're trying to do it, why we've embraced technology, how it benefits Imagine, and some of the initiatives that we've taken and we're working on and will be working on in the next couple of years. Our technology and the things that we started really started with our smart home. This was an initiative that started over 10 years ago, and we did this because we really needed to have a location, a site, a place where we could test technology. where we could try out different applications. We could throw technology into home to see how it benefits the people that we support, the people that we serve, how the people interact with technology. We could learn from it. So we needed a couple of environments where we could use, put these technologies into place, succeed, and frankly fail in some of this technology. So the idea of what we're trying to do with this technology is take the initiatives that we started with the smart homes and really start moving them out into other environments. Our goal at Imagine and in smart supports is not to continue to build smart home after smart home after smart home. It's to take what we learn from these homes, move them into the other environments. You saw some of the graphs and statistics that Mark was showing, some of the challenge that we will be facing in a couple of years. We think technology plays a key role in those areas. Specifically, when we look at technology, we're looking at solutions that can help people that are living longer. Since 1920, the average age of a person with a developmental disability has literally tripled. It's gone from about 25 to about 75 since 1920. That represents a number of varying issues with the complexity, the health issues that they face, the kind of information that caregivers need to have, focus on wellness promotion rather than, so we're preventing kind of injury, illness, treating symptoms in a proactive way. Also, in the next couple years, if you go on the Department of Labor website, the top two jobs that will be predicted in growth, of 70% growth in the next 10 years, are home health aides and personal care aides. So the question that we're facing as we look towards the future is, where is our workforce? What happens if we don't have a workforce? How do we help our workforce become more efficient? How do we give the information that these caregivers need, our workforce needs? And how do we anticipate those and educate our workforce to be more productive? And we think that technology will be a piece of that answer. We also think technology supports to be creating a more transparent organization. It can support families, it can support, give families much more information, as Fred talked about earlier, either through social media or even with someone that is in services and how we link with doctor's offices and the kind of health information that will be required. Technology can inform parents, it can help parents, it can set up communication between case managers and or as needs change, that the family continues to be involved and informed of that. Mark will probably talk about this a little bit later, but over the last 5-6 years, we've had a substantial change in how Imagine and services are reimbursed. We anticipate that that will continue to change. And so how does technology help handle that information? How does it make, rather than changing whole systems up and learning new systems, how can we become more efficient in our billing? How can we become more efficient in our operations? How can we reduce our overhead to support, to be a, basically a lean and mean and elegant organization to support our mission? We believe that funding streams will be obviously more self-directed. We've seen that in the last couple of years. But families need information, and those self-directed service providers need to be able to move information back and forth seamlessly between the community center board and or the state in a meaningful and proactive way. So we're looking at technology to help solve some of those concerns and problems. And finally, just the overall benefits of the cloud. The ability to gather information, to move information, to store information, and to share that information is what the cloud really represents. And we think we are in a good position to take advantage of that. So how does this all help? As you saw Mark's statistics and the information, it allows us to take this information. The statistics that Mark showed earlier, it's rather unique in our field to have that kind of information to be able to plan based upon where we see needs going, where we see funding streams going, and the availability of those funding streams. We know that the resources, although we're seeing an increase in resources this year and plan to see that, we're going to see limited resources. All you have to do is open up the newspaper, read the challenges that Medicaid is facing. You hear about sequestration. You hear about fiscal cliffs. This is just in the last couple of months. The social service system across the country is probably going to be, it's not going to be as generous as it's been in the past. So we have to anticipate that, plan for the worst, and prepare if it doesn't. And technology can help us do that. We want to create more efficiency in our service and supports. We want to create with that efficiency, we want to use technology to create opportunities. What does that mean? Well, that means different models of service. If technology can help someone live more independently, if it can support a family member who maybe needs some support with remote monitoring or a health and safety issue with someone who's living at home, technology can create a new service, a self-directed service in those areas. It can also add transparency. The ability to share and move information to make it available either through a website, through a social media connection, or even just sharing progress notes with those loved ones and those families that are involved in direct care aspects of what we do. And then also what it can do is it create opportunities for partnerships. I'll talk about this in a minute, but Imagine has been working in this area to create opportunities with companies that we're helping to evolve and develop their projects. We have partnerships with universities that we're working on where they're developing some of these projects. What we do, and when you saw this, when I started this presentation, I was talking about the concept of smart supports. We look at our technology in sort of three specific areas here. We look at how the business runs, which is the enterprise applications. This is how we train staff. This is how we do our financials. This is our HR systems. These are ways that we sort of run the business. Consumer and assistive technologies, those are the specific applications that can help a person with a developmental disability live more independently, live more productivity, be more involved in their community. And then we're looking at a third area of how do we take remote monitoring? And this isn't necessarily the use of cameras or those areas. It's remote blood pressure. It's weight. It's pulse ox. It's health-related data. It's also data that can tell when somebody's gone to work. It's also information that can take support somebody who's maybe living semi-independently, who might be aging, who might have some health information, and if we can get related issues to make sure that their blood pressure is contained, to make sure that their weight is they're maintaining their weight, and send that to appropriate health providers, that's what remote monitoring is to us. Ways, when I talked about promoting wellness, when I talked about the ability for people to live independently and addressing complex needs, remote monitoring is a way to look at those areas. And when we talk about smart supports, you don't ever want to just put a specific technology into place without making sure it ties into something. You want to make sure that health record is going to the right people, that it's addressing a specific need, that we're looking at those areas, that assistive technology is tied to a larger plan to make sure that they all work together and they're interrelated and through smart supports. So what are the areas that we're working on smart supports? Well, when we started with our smart homes, we really wanted to put it into a specific program. And one of the issues that we immediately discovered, and you'll see this sometimes in schools, is the technology is often separate than the plan. It's often separate than what someone's working on. They give someone a piece of technology. We wanted to figure out how to integrate it, so we put it into the whole, what we're calling the IP, the individual plan, where the people that are getting smart supports actually have a technology plan. They're being assessed, they're being evaluated. How is this technology benefiting them? Can we figure out ways to create an assessment tool that helps guide parents to pick an appropriate piece of technology and support them as they pick their technology? We've created a technology lab. We're running it through our day service right now, but we have over 240 people in this day service that will potentially have access to this lab that will be exposed to more and more assistive technology. And that serves two purposes. The first one, as I said, it exposes people with disabilities to more technology, allows them to test it in an actual environment. But two, it also exposes our staff, our direct support staff, to that technology as they learn to use it, and they can share that information in different ways. We've created two specific positions here at Imagine, and these are unique not only here in Colorado, but really fairly unique across the country. We have Alex Andrews and Chris Baumgart, I don't know if Chris is here, but Alex is, that actually work and are developing expertise in assistive technology. So this isn't a therapist that's sitting down in Denver. These are people that are integrated within the services of our organization, that are working with the families, that are working with the sites, that are going out and working with the staff to solve these problems and help develop and create technology to benefit the person with disabilities. We're implementing technology into our employment services. We have a couple of people right now that are using tablets and applications to help them in their jobs, to remind them of tasks to do, to assist them to be more independent in their employment. We have partnerships with Carisalva, which is an online medication administration record. We've been helping develop their software for the last couple of years that we are incorporating within our operations right now. And then we also have a partnership with AbleLink Technologies. AbleLink Technologies is out of Colorado Springs. They help in design specific prompting and assistive and adaptive technologies that are being used in some of our homes, help people learn tasks. They help people navigate the community. So we're working with them to help evolve their software to make it more friendly, to make it more usable to the people that we support. We have partnerships currently going on with the University of Colorado and the University of Wyoming. At the University of Colorado, we give them a list of 10 to 15 specific projects for everything from robotic arms to adjustable tables to multiple switches to different closet designs. And these engineering students, they come together in groups of five or six, and they help create solutions. So they get to go out to the homes, they go out to the apartments, and they interview the people that are receiving services, and they try to design a solution. In some cases, it's been pretty cool. Our best success to this point has been an adaptive Wii board, where someone on a wheelchair can wheel up on the Wii board, and they can go skiing or use the Wii board as part of a device. We just started this last semester with the University of Wyoming. They have a whole interdisciplinary approach from computer science to engineering. So we'll see what projects develop out of that, but they have a list, and they'll be working with us, and we hope to have a long-term relationship with them. We're planning on introducing our technology systems into our early intervention programs. Two ways, for two specific reasons. To help therapists that go into the home record and become more efficient in documenting their interactions. But two, we want to start learning how apps and the applications that are through the iPad, how children and how it will support and improve the services that we support. So we're looking on how those two applications work. And finally, actually I have one more after this. Colorado has language in its waiver right now, has language in its services, that it will allow for remote monitoring services and supports. They have not written rules in this area yet. We have suggested to them rules. There are currently five other states that do remote monitoring and have written it into their services, their service design. We're hoping Colorado will become the sixth, and we're trying to prepare them and give them information so they can do write in common sense and ethical rules to support services. And finally, we'll be looking at telemedicine and some of our behavioral health services of how people can access psychologists and psychiatrists more effectively. Telemedicine is currently used in a lot of different parts of the country, and it might be effective way to it will be an effective way to allow people to have better access and address concerns through their psychiatrists and psychologists. So those are some of the initiatives that we are working on and will be working on in the future, and covers some of our initiatives in smart supports. Does anybody have any questions? Yeah. Right. The question is of the partnerships that we currently have and are working on, is there a way that we can open that up for other people to suggest projects in those areas? Absolutely. And we're going to get to that level. Up to this point, we've just been trying to create a organized process with the university. So I think it's in our steps, and we can certainly do that, and we'll look to do that in the next year. And we'll probably use our website in some way to do that, to say, here's an avenue to suggest a project. The other thing that we'll be doing and we'll be planning within the next year is through our technology lab, we'll be doing open houses. So parents can come in and they can bring someone in to try the technology, or they can just come in and try it themselves. So in the next year, we'll be planning those kind of open houses, and it's in Boulder, And as the technology lab develops, that'll be offered and available. Yes, ma'am. Well, it's currently run through our labor source program, which is our employment provider. What they do is they will work specifically with Alex Andrews, who is our assistive technology manager. Is that your, I'm sorry? Architect. And if we have a specific person that labor source feels is a good candidate, they'll work with Alex. Alex will do an assessment, will help evaluate some of those technology, and Alex and the employment counselor or coordinator will then develop that technology, put it in place, and support that technology for the person in employment services. How do you get started? Specifically, you talk to your case manager, and this is not a recruitment for labor source at this point. I want to be clear with that. But if you're interested in those areas, we could, if you have someone who is currently employed and you think they would benefit from technology, please talk to your case manager and have them get in touch with either myself, and then we will figure out the most appropriate avenue in supporting that technology in the work environment. And we want to make this available, and we want to help grow this, obviously. We feel it's vital to the Imagine mission, so any way that we can support that technology, we will try to figure out a way to do that. Yeah. We do report them, not on a routine basis, more on an as-needed basis, but it's a great comment, and we'll take that back to put a more systematic process for reporting. The question was, do we have a process in place for reporting our improvements, reporting what's going on? And that has been and the answer is not at this point a formal process. We do it on Facebook regularly, and we report individual progress, but we could do an overall goal sharing, and we'll put that on our agenda to make sure that that happens. That's a good suggestion. Thanks, Jim. Other questions? Well, thank you. I'll turn this back over to Mark.
Thanks. I'm back. Thank you, Greg, very much. Sure. Something that I think and thank you, Fred, too, for your presentation. What I want to add in terms of our vision here is you might look at this from a provider standpoint or a family standpoint, that this is an add-on. The way we're viewing the future, this is going to be an integral part of a person's life. So all of this work that we're doing now is development stages for what we think is going to be the long-term care system, if you will, that's going to be including this with everybody. I'm going to move along to something about consulting services, apparently. I'm moving along for those online to slide number 22, and I also want to acknowledge, since we've been talking here, some additional members of our board of directors have shown up. Joe Hansen showed up over here, John Frisbee, Heidi Stortz in the back, Lisa Fierro, and our board president, Whitney Blair, showed up. So if you have questions of them afterward. I'm going to spend a brief period of time on some exciting news that I think is going on at the state. If you recall last year, if you were in this room or online, you heard that the state had a shortfall right at this time, projected shortfall for last year of $8.5 million, and they had to make some adjustments. And this list of five things here, delay filling vacancies on down through conduct audits of the supports intensity scale, have been occurring for the last year. And now we have a scenario where the same state has the opposite problem, where they're projecting an $8 million not a shortfall, they have an $8 million under expenditure. To give you some idea of what that means, that's the equivalent of between 115 and 120 full year comprehensive resources for people to be using. So I don't think that this is all because of delay of filling vacancies, but this combination of things has created the opposite issue that the state had from last year. This is a list of things some of it was going on last year. The governor's taken some steps. They're rearranging things at the state. They have, he has issued a couple of orders to create some offices. It's not so important what all these proposed moves are. it's important for you to know the role that we're going to play. If you can imagine this, we're acting as a storefront for the state of Colorado. So when you come to imagine, we're not going to tell you necessarily about all these things going on at the state unless you actually ask us, but rather we will be the navigation, if you will. If you come into the storefront, we're going to make it easy for you to be able to access the services that are available from the state. Because oftentimes as the state's moving all of these things around, it's difficult for us to follow, and we're doing it every day. So I can only imagine what it might be from an end user standpoint, a family member trying to figure out what's available for my son or daughter. We're here to help with that. And if you really want to delve into what's going on behind the scenes, I can do that, but it might not be pleasant all the time. Really excited about this. This is terrific information coming out of the governor's office. It was announced first last fall. The governor and his staff recognize the flat system that we've had for the last few years. And they are proposing in the governor's budget, and it's not the governor that decides, it's the legislative joint budget committee that decides and the legislature, what actually is going to happen next year. Next year starts July 1st, 2013. But the governor came forth with this list of things, and I'll explain what they are. The decision on whether or not these things fly is going to be made next month, March 5th, at the Legislative Joint Budget Committee's meeting. It's called figure setting, when they say, these are the figures we're putting in place, this is what we think we can afford for the state. They push it through legislation, the governor signs it, and guess what, we've got a lot more resources available. 93 high-risk adults. High risk in this situation, most of them means 50 years of age or older. High risk being that there's risk that there isn't going to be anyone to care for them going forward. Earlier on, I mentioned here at Imagine, we have identified 17 people that fit that description right now. So these are statewide resources that were hoped to become available beginning July of this summer. 7 high-risk adults into the supported living services program. Similar situation, 50 years of age or older, who may not need necessarily the high-intensity comprehensive services that the HCBSDD waiver brings. Huge one at the bottom. 576 children are slated to receive off the wait list for Children's Extensive Support Waiver. And I mentioned earlier, here at Imagine, we currently have 31 children enrolled. We're looking at over 50 are on that wait list who will take advantage of these resources if they're approved by the legislature. And we are not only optimistic, but feeling very, I wouldn't use the word secure, but really comfortable that we're getting a great deal of support from the legislature right now on this proposal by the governor. Some of these children right now that are waiting, they are getting some support from local funds from both Broomfield and Boulder County, which means that we would be able to move them into this and then look at other ways to be able to support others with other needs that are not being covered by the state at this point. 50 youths transitioning out of foster care, that's about a standard number of children that are in foster care right now who have a developmental disability. When they turn 21, they can't go back home. Well, 99% of the time, they can't go back home. And there's no place else for them to go, and they're there because they need that kind of support. They'll be transitioning into adult services, and the state typically makes resources available for them to do that. There's only been 1 year in the last 2 decades that the state did not do that. So we're optimistic about that. 38 youths transitioning out of CES to SLS. Again, these are children who are recognized as having an extraordinary need. They are living at home. They will continue to live at home. So when they reach adulthood, that there needs to be something available for them to continue. And they also are losing the support from the school system. So moving into SLS services. The 40 adult emergency enrollments. Emergencies have a more specific definition by the state. For example, if all of a sudden an individual finds himself homeless, if a parent can't manage their son or daughter anymore and the risk of them becoming homeless. And we have had that here in our service area. There are 40 adult emergency resources being proposed by the governor as well, again, statewide. And then there happens to be 5 individuals and the state knows who they are by name that are currently living in an institutional setting who have a dual diagnosis, that is both having a developmental disability and a mental health diagnosis. And looking for that movement from that for them from that institutional setting into community-based settings. This is huge. This hasn't happened in Colorado for as long as I can remember, and I've been here a long time. So this is a huge proposal coming out of the governor's office, and we couldn't be happier about it. And so we've gone publicly saying we support this. We're talking with our local legislators, asking them to continue to support this, and I'm saying we're pretty optimistic right now. That being said, we're also sharing this graphic, and I'll take a moment to explain what it is. This is not my graphic. This is a graphic that was given to the Legislative Joint Budget Committee a year ago last January by their analyst. And what it means is on the left, in 1998, if you had $100, and each year on the top line, if you traced the Consumer Price Index in Denver, Boulder, Greeley area, as the Consumer Price Index, the cost of doing business, went up by each percentage point, you would follow the blue line, the blue-purplish line. The green line is if in 1998 you looked at the rate of payment that we received and all of our providers in our network received for a service, and then you followed that with an increased percentage of our rates, it wasn't always an increase, we've had decreases in rate payment. We've seen that flatten out and drop, and you see the gap that's been created. In other words, what we were paid to do business, and it's not just us, it's the service providers across the state of Colorado, have not kept up with the cost of doing business. And where we are right now, that gap has grown to this extraordinary amount. So for every $150 in terms of cost of doing business, the state of Colorado has made payment to that service provider of $115. That can't continue. This trend is not healthy at all. I mean, anybody in any business would know that this is ridiculous. We can't possibly do this. The little uptick here at the bottom, and I have added 2 years to what was presented to the Joint Budget Committee, this little uptick is the governor's proposed 1.5% increase for next year. We are lobbying and asking for something greater than that. And I am hopeful that the decision makers in the legislature will realize that this gap is problematic, particularly if you start saying, well, if that's where it is now, what's going to happen in the next few years? Imagine has gone public with what we were hoping for is a rate restoration, at least back to here. We'd be happy with anything, really, but you can see the problem that we're having. So even though we have all of these new resources that are being proposed by the governor, for every new resource we get, we have to water it down for somebody else. And it's not just us. It's every provider in our network that has to do the same thing. If they accept a new person into their business, if this is what you're paid, you've got to water down services for somebody else. I don't know how else you would do it unless you sell more cookies to be able to make up the difference. So we have gone public with, and in our network across the state, with how serious this problem is and how much we think we need to have some rate restoration back into where we were in 2009. So we're working pretty hard behind the scenes to be able to hopefully accomplish that going into next year. I am optimistic that that's being received as an important issue, at least at this point. I wanted to mention a couple of things about the regional centers of the state because they also have resources. They have people who have the right to access services from a community-based setting, not just in an institutional setting. There are about 300 people in the three state-operated facilities right now. The state themselves, the state employees who are operating the services in the institutions, are assessing each individual, and they have come up with far more than 100 that they think are ready for community-based services. And we'll be taking them on a case-by-case basis to see if there's an available setting for them in the community. We have taken a position that we don't think anybody needs to be served in a state-operated facility. That's the position of Alliance, the network of providers across the state of Colorado. 13 states have already moved on to no state-operated services. There's no difference between them and Colorado, but Colorado still is operating and serving 300 people in those facilities. Last thing I want to touch on before I open it up is our plans for a home in Broomfield. We were fortunate to be awarded a federally funded HUD grant for $640,000 to help build this home. We have the plans in place. We have the property. We have the location, Santa Fe Drive in Huron. It's a small home. It's a six-bed home. We plan to open it next spring. And we will continue moving forward with this plan, but I want to just mention a couple of risks that are in front of us that have been in front of all of the providers in Colorado. The policy in the state to pull back on resources as there's attrition has created a crumbling of the infrastructure, if you will, in Colorado. Just anecdotally, in my communication and conversations with other service providers across the state, we know of at least 16 homes that have closed in the last couple of years. So as these homes close, and you've got people in regional centers, and we've got kids that are growing up and coming out of some of the group centers, the foster care system, there's fewer and fewer places for them to go. The state's relying so heavily on the host home model that we think that there may be some growing risks there. So what if we fill six beds? And it's a six beds for seniors, so the likelihood is somebody will, through attrition, pass on. We will have an empty bed. We have empty beds right now. Lots of providers have empty beds across the state. It's no different. In our service area, we happen to be the only one that operates staffed facilities, three-bed, six-bed, and eight-bed homes. But in our current uncertain environment, it makes it very, very difficult to continue down that path. So we're doing what we can in communicating with the state about how important we think that issue is, that they look at those policies and maybe take another look at it and say, is this really in the best interest of the entire state to see this sort of crumbling of the infrastructure out in the community-based services? So I just wanted to bring that to your attention. It is on my desk every day. A lot of things I didn't talk about at Imagine. We're doing all kinds of things. Our services are doing very well. Why don't I open it up to maybe something you're interested in? I've already got all my interests taken care of.
Just a quick question. On the $8 million increase that you're talking about, number one question is, would the life become lost if you know that you've got it? And number two question is, off that $8 million, is that all state money or is it 50-50 between state and Medicare?
Good question. The question is, of the $8 million under expenditure projected for this year, so that would be at year's end, fiscal year's end, the end of June of this summer, they're projecting $8 million under expenditure. How much of that is state money, and what happens to it, I think? I believe that's a combination of state and Medicaid money together. John, correct me if I'm wrong on that. A combination of both state and Medicaid money, so it's after the federal piece is put in. This doesn't happen very often, so in my monthly meetings with the Division for Developmental Disabilities, when they report that to us, we say, so when are you going to either release some resources, look at your cap for case management services, because we have individuals receiving case management right now who have already hit their cap. Does that mean we're not going to serve them anymore in case management? No, we can't do that, but we're not going to get paid. Could you release that? Could you release more behavioral services, more day services? And there's a lot of things that they could do, but we haven't got an answer yet on when they're ready to make a decision. The directors that are meeting with them, whether it's service providers, in this case it's community center board directors, are saying, do not leave this money on the table. There's so much need. We have such a huge need in the community. You cannot conscionably leave that money on the table. We don't have a plan yet from them, from the state. I'm sure they'll pull the trigger pretty soon because we only got 3-4 months left in the fiscal year. Whether they can burn that all down or not, I don't. I'm unhappy to see that, if I haven't said that. So, That's a great question. Yes?
Would you please share more detailed information about
the Bloomfield? Well, it's not built. It's a question about more details about the home in Bloomfield. Right. So I'll use the example that we have an 8-bed home in North Boulder that is specific for seniors with developmental disabilities as well. So we're sort of following that model, although the HUD requirements said it can't be an 8-bed home, it has to be a 6-bed home. It will look more like the more recent home that we built 2 years ago in Longmont of that size. So it will be fully accessible. It will not be a smart home, but it will be capable of a lot of the technologies that we've been testing out. Again, targeting seniors. Older than me. Do we have a target age, Jody? What about the rest, though? So if I could sort of collapse your answer for those online, it was we don't have a specific age, but we're looking at those that are growing in age and have some other health-related needs, potentially including dementia. Does that help? I'm sorry? And I don't think I understand the question completely. Have I looked into the situation?
Of the dog free kennel?
No, I don't know.
You don't know anything about it?
No, I'm sorry. But I'm willing to understand it.
She might get infected.
The possibility of a person who's bagging dog treats for a volunteer or for a job. And she's with labor. The issue is at her job placement through labor source that she may be at risk of becoming infected in her job. I will admit that I'm not an expert in bagging dog treats, but I would be willing to pass along the concern.
She's only working 1 day a week now instead of 3.
Okay.
So I wanted to then check in with that.
I will pass that along to make sure that they do. I'd be happy to do that. And after this, not now, because we're piped in, I would like to learn your daughter's name. But not now. Another question. Well, thank you very much for coming and spending time with us. If you have questions that you have of the staff or the board of directors or of me that you would like to do privately, quietly, I'm open for that as well. We don't have any printed flyers. Look at Fred. We don't have any flyers with us to hand out tonight. Okay. We'll make some flyers available. The question was, do we have any flyers to hand out? Of course, those of you online, probably doesn't matter because you're not here. Thank you very much for coming, spending the evening with us. Next year, if you want to do it online, you can do that. But we'd love to have you here, too. Have a good evening. And I remind you that our board meetings will kick off at 7 o'clock. It's a public meeting, and you're welcome to stay.